Why, hello.
Welcome to the Backpack Show, where we get insights about success from unusual places. It's Friday.
I'm just thinking. Hello. Today is Friday.
Hello, friends.
Welcome to the Backpack Show. Can you imagine if that was our show? You know, every now and again, I think that would be great to do with the guests to really get really hardcore serious sounding and grown up sounding. And then they come on this.
I'm way more like that Saturday Night Live sketch about the Italian talk show host, Vinny Vedeci, where it's like, hey, hasta noche. Like, it's all very high energy. It's more like with a little bit more sarcasm.
Listen, this is like Fight Club. If you are here and we haven't seen you before in the Backpack Show, or you haven't left a comment lately, please leave a comment. We don't know you're here unless you tell us you're here. I see a number, but you could be anybody. We don't know your Coach Scott Woodard.
You could be anybody.
We don't know your Debbie Savio.
We have a threefer today.
Three guests. Count them, three.
Steve Spahn, COO of Able Gamers, disability advocate. His nonprofit's dedicated to helping people with different abilities get back into the game. We're going to talk about Twitch. We're going to talk about gaming. We're going to talk about all kinds of things with him. We have Lacey Chisholm, founder of Fit for Dance, which is a studio she made to encourage African-American women and children to take charge of their health through exercise. So I'm excited about that, too. And we have Elizabeth Gay, who founded Community Space. Do you want to say it?
Ipade.
For women of color to gather and change the world. And these women are amazing, by the way. I'm poaching continually from the list of American Express 100 for 100 grant winners.
They're all amazing. Every person we get from that list is like gold. So
just Elizabeth, so bright and
big shoes.
Yes, and accomplished.
I'm glad we cleared up earlier that it's Ipade, though, because you know I wouldn't want people to think they belong to. I paid. Well, I paid to be in this thing.
Yeah.
So we got a lot of stuff to cover. All right, let's
better get to it.
No, I lost the button. I can't even find it. How do you even start a show like that?
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz. Welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
Your biological father's here.
My biological father, Steve Brogan, and his wife, Diane Brogan.
Also, you're ridiculous. They are his parents, everyone.
Who gave birth
to
me.
This is your first time watching.
Robert Collins. Deb Lee. Robert Collins sent me a cuss word today in private. I have to tell you that.
Really?
First time I ever saw one.
How do you get on that distribution list?
I got to tell you. Well, listen, Nancy Ramsey, I got to tell you something. I just got in connection with Frankie Boyle via YouTube last night and watched a little bit of Frankie Boyle. You know, he's no Janie Godley. That's all we could say, Nancy Ramsey. Anybody else is a Scottish comedian, and he sure has some words. Well, you know, it's hard to know who to start on the show. Steve just asked the question, even backstage, like, who's going first? Anyway, we're going to grab Steve Spahn out first. Steve Spahn is a CEO of Able Gamers. He's done a lot to help with different people's abilities in gaming, and it's a topic. I'm a gamer all the time and have been since I was a little kid. And I'm always happy to talk to other gamers. And this particular topic, it's just been so many years in the making. And now it almost starts to feel more and more like it's going to happen. So
and like you, he has a high maintenance cat, apparently.
He does have, but a precious loving cat, not like mine, who's looking to do a fight or a throwdown over here all of a sudden.
I don't know.
Let's grab our man, Steve. We'll start there. Hello, Steven Spahn.
Oh. Mr. Chris Brogan, I tried to make that as high level as I could.
It worked.
Where's the cat? Boo. No,
listen, you would not be the first person who's like, put the cat back on. Like, all right, gosh, there's my 36-pound cat. He's a fluffy ball of love named Leia.
So you're a Twitch streamer as well, amongst the other things you do. And we only just recently joined Twitch, so our numbers are like, you know, your drop-offs.
We have like two.
Like, wait, three consecutive.
My kid.
Yeah, one's your kid, one's her husband. So that's how we're doing. I wanted to start there as an odd starting point because you're the host of a show and you make this sort of thing happen. You have a few challenges that I don't have to make a show and you still make it look effortless. What the heck?
You know, I think that the important thing to remember about creating any content, whether you're disabled or able-bodied, is just that your challenges are different than someone else's. So you might have kids or an angry cat or an allergicness to being funny. Who knows? Whatever it is. You know, you have different things you have to go through. For me, it was just a matter of overcoming this fear that people would be hostile or jerks just because of the disability when you're profoundly disabled like I am. You know, you deal with a lot of judgment from the public. And I kind of figured at first that that's what I would deal with on Twitch. And it turned out that although it does happen from time to time, it's very rare. So, you know, it ended up being a great experience, and I'm happy I decided to do it.
So the Funko is taking up the space that otherwise the cat would occupy?
Yeah, the cat would literally jump into my arms. I'm basically quadriplegic. I've got a disability called SMA, which stops me from really being able to use my muscles. So the cat will literally just jump into my arms if the Eevee's not here and kick my mouse out of my hands and just be like, all right, I live here now.
This is where I
This is your life now.
Yep.
Cat condo.
I was going to bring up the fact that, you know, we're heading into a large sports ball event weekend where all eyes are on the ads. And one of the ads that blew me away and made me almost say nice things about Microsoft, which is rare for me. Actually, it's not true. I like them more than most people do these days, was the Gaming for Everyone ad. I'm a huge fan of not being copyright stricken. So I'm just going to post just a tiny little bit of the commercial without the sound or whatever. But the reason I wanted to show it was because it was one of the first times I imagine that a lot of people thought about, oh yeah, wait a minute. Like these people kind of get through their day to day life or whatnot, but these kids want to be gamers. These kids are gamers, and you know, they don't always have the same abilities or options that, you know, to play the games because the controllers are made for able-bodied people. So this is Microsoft announcing like their first foray into a really usable for everybody kind of gaming platform. I wanted to talk about that first, I guess, because, you know, Able Gamers is around these kinds of concepts, and I imagine, and far more. So I just want to get some of your thoughts on that.
So that was one of the highlights of my 2018-19 year, 3.5 years of working in silence with Microsoft to bring this controller. We were in so early on this controller that the legal department did actually not approve of the people we were working with to show us the controller. They had not like written off on it yet. So, but they didn't tell the guys that they couldn't draw it on a legal pad and show it to us. So literally they drew out what it looked like in a 3D space. We're like, here's what it's going to look like. We just can't show it to you. I'm like, okay, that's cool. So they asked us for a consultation, and me and my buddy Craig Kaufman we're in on the ground floor. We brought in multiple team members, our founder Mark, you know, as time went on to add more and more pain points and data points. They got a lot of the inspiration from a controller that we had unveiled at the Penny Arcade, you know, 6 years previously. And it really was just this idea: what if you took an Xbox controller and you changed it into a box that had buttons that you could lay anywhere you want in front of you in order to play it like a keyboard? And it worked. The messaging was a little off in that people kind of thought that if you have a disability, you just get one of these and magically everything works. And that's not exactly how.
Oh, Steve, I can't game for shit. No.
If you can make me one that gets headshots, I'd be in for it. But
my kids would unplug the controller before they gave it to me.
So, to that end, though, you know, that's one of the things that I loved about that commercial. The perfect visibility, by the way, could not have been any better as far as, you know, getting people to understand the concept. But what I love most is that it's so perfectly handled as far as these kids are playing games. Is you're not supposed to go, ah, you're supposed to go, oh, duh, how come we didn't think of this? How come we didn't realize that, you know, maybe if you're missing a limb or maybe if your fingers aren't exactly the same way, you can't hold an Xbox controller the same way. You're going to need some different gear. Your Penny Arcade debut one explained it, but it still felt, you know, it was like proof of concept, obviously. It showed people you could do it. But you sort of had that almost floating in the air of, well, if you were a nerd enough that you could go and, you know, learn the gear, which is all you wanted. You just wanted to say it can be done. Where do we go? Where does this have to go now? Because it's not perfect. It's not ideal for you.
No, and here's the problem is that there's so many different fights to be had on the frontier of disability and gaming. So, you know, number one, you have to change people's opinions. Number one, you know, there are people out there who are disabled. And if you're a gamer, you have played with one. And if you talk online, you've talked to a person with disabilities. The same as celebrities. Chances are, if you're a gamer, at some point, you have played with a celebrity and you do not know it. Because we are just anonymous screen names. You don't know who we are. So, you know, there's a lot of things that we need to change as a concept of how we think about other gamers. Too many times have I clicked on somebody's head, as you said, and then they came to my chat and were like, oh, I didn't know you were disabled. Now I feel bad. I'm like, well, I murdered you, so it's okay. Yeah.
you should feel worse.
Right, right. Yeah, it's fine. You know, and then there's things like language barriers, like, for example, you know, earlier in the show we introduced, with differently abled, that's the most offensive word you possibly can say.
Is it?
It is.
Oh, set me up. What do I need to say different?
Disabled.
Just disabled.
Disabled. Yeah.
Okay.
So it's very much a reclaiming of power word. Disabled was considered to be, oh, you're disabled. You know, it's something doesn't work. And now we're reclaiming it as it's just part of who we are. You know, and there's people who do person with disabilities, and there's people who do disabled person. I'd say I'm a disabled gamer. I am disabled.
I just suck at it. That's what I say.
Right?
It's out in front.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's different fronts there. And really, it's just that as, you know, it's only an hour long show, so I can't talk for 6 years on the subject. But essentially, we're going to just keep evolving technology, right? And I always say that as technology becomes more accessible, it becomes less accessible. So you might be able to have it on your phone in a train or in the bathroom while you're taking a poop, but it doesn't necessarily mean that the setup is there for someone with a disability to be able to play it. So, you know, you have to be able to navigate all these weird landmines in the field to be able to get everything right, and it's just a matter of education now.
It's really disappointing how it seems like people, or at social networks especially, but really technology people, just launch a new thing and then think about accessibility after. Like audio tweets, no captioning, or, you know, video. Even the White House was sending out videos with no captioning. And it's like, really? So it definitely seems like people who don't have to think about accommodations don't think about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, here's the truth of the matter is people just don't necessarily even think about these kind of things, right? So one of the most favorite stories I've got of interacting with developers is I met with the devs behind StarCraft, a Blizzard game all about aliens and humans fighting for terrain on planets. And if you've never played it, it's really fun. But it's got a little tiny mini-map in the lower right-hand corner that's red and green, and that's how you see where the enemies are and your friends are, right? So I said to them, when they asked, how can we make our game better? I said, well, start number one, you could make your mini-map not red and green, which is the number one colorblind issue in the world. And they were like, oh, I should have known that. I was like, why? Oh, I'm red and green colorblind. Okay, yeah, you probably should have realized your own disability, yes. But
he's like, I didn't know why I was doing so bad.
I'm a bad coder.
You know, and that's the thing is when you're disabled, you find little ways around things all the time. So, you know, he had just figured out how to get around that and figured everyone else could see it and didn't think of, that there might be someone who can't get around it like he can. So that's just the kind of thing, just like you don't maybe think about the challenges you have in your life and how you have to get around them. And you figured out ways to deal with them, then sometimes people with disabilities don't necessarily think about it. I'm telling you, you're never going to find a more ingenuitive bunch, a bunch of MacGyvers than the disability community. I mean, my mom taught me, since I can't use my arms, I used to take hot dog tongs that you would like flip burgers with on the grill in order to eat potato chips because I could flex my wrist but not lift up my arm. So, you know, you just find ways and you move forward.
So you probably don't experiment with a lot of new flavors because that wouldn't be worth it. That sucks.
For the time it took me to get this chip to my mouth, that blew. Yeah. By the way, thank you so much for correcting that. It's it was funny. My youngest son is autistic, and I kept saying has autism, and the autistic community crapped all over me. And I was like, I thought I had it right. And my son was no help. He's just like, I don't care what you say.
Okay. I think it's important to specify there that everyone should be able to label themselves and whatever he wants to use. And, you know, person first, that any first. It's an entire thing that we get into. Even everybody inside Able Gamers doesn't agree on which one to use, but we use person first for at work because that is the one that people get along with the most. But there will always be somebody who wants a different word. The only word that we all agree is bad is differently able. And that's just because it's kind of like playing it down, like, oh, you're fine. Don't worry about it. You can get up. It's fine.
Walk it off.
Yeah, rub some dirt on it. It's fine.
So I have 80,000 questions, but I got to wrap it up. So I'm going to give you just a couple more. And these are nerdy questions that Naz and I both had. So my nerdy question is, what games do you play the most right now?
Right now, the most I'm playing is Rocket League and Escape from Tarkov because... So for those of you who have never played Escape from Tarkov, if you have ever been randomly walking on a bright sunshiny day with flowers and a bear comes up and punches you in the nuts, it's exactly like that. If you've ever wanted to experience that, that is Escape from Tarkov.
You've been spending all this time, you're walking and you're like, you're feeling good about yourself and you just wanted your hope crushed out of you.
That sounds like parenting.
And Rocket League, I am the absolute worst player. I lie. I have two questions. So the other one, Naz asked in general, says, how many hours a day do you spend gaming in general?
Not as much as I would like. I stream on Twitch for 40 hours a month. Sometimes I push that closer to 80 if it's been a popular month. But my job keeps me busy, and I'm a content creator. So I'm out there making philosophical videos and whatnot to try to make the world a better place.
Covering it all. And then I did have one last question, and it's about the sort of, it's gaming community. So the gaming community is not always, it's almost never PC. It's almost always that, you know, you get to hear the N-word way more than you hear in every normal life. Retard, AIDS, gay, everything, anything you don't ever want to hear people say to other people, welcome to gaming chat. What's your big take on that, or how do you communicate about that?
So I'm actually embroiled in a battle with Twitch to get them to remove the hard R word from its lexicon.
Good.
And, you know, I had some success. I was able to get them to ban it from chat where you can't type it in regular just chat to anyone. It'll automatically filter it out. But they still haven't removed it from things like titles and whatnot because they're afraid to take a stand on it. And, you know... It's things like that that I continue to work with them with. That's why they gave me the ambassador, is no one disabled person or any minority is a monolith. I can't represent every single disabled person out there, but I can tell you some of the basics, like we shouldn't use the R word because that's offensive. And
you really you know, want to be pro R word. That's what I don't get. They're like, oh, we're afraid to take a stand. You know,
they don't want to be pro R word. They don't want to just get in. I think they're afraid that some of the money may dry up if they start policing words. And I'm like, well, okay, don't police words. Don't cancel people, but also maybe protect your people who are targeted for harassment. That'd be my suggestion.
Seems like a good plan.
Yeah.
Makes sense to me.
I mean, you're the brand manager. Listen, you tell them.
Try it anyway.
You want to be the pro R word brand, you go ahead.
Come get it. Steve Spawn, thank you so much for coming on. Thanks for being part of this. This has been super big, and people know how to find you. They'll come grab you. I'm going to try to get to watch you. Are you streaming tonight?
I am streaming tonight. Yeah, tonight is we're going to do Rocket Cars and Fall Guys. So.
Oh, I'll dig in. See you soon. Take it easy.
Take care.
Okay. I'm reading my show notes here because we have some things. So I get to do one ad now. So I hadn't been putting up my ad for Castos, which is we just launched our podcast 3 or 4 days ago because it's so easy to do. So we decided to do our advertising on Castos. So here we go. Castos, we're sponsored by Castos. They're a great podcasting app. Libsyn is the sort of long-standing host, and I love people at Libsyn. But my buddy Matt Medeiros works at Castos, and I said, hey, I want to try out your platform. He goes, done. And so,
he's
welcome.
Lovely.
You are now available on anywhere that you can get a podcast. So Apple, Google, whatever it's called. There's all kinds of new ones that I've never even heard about. And I'm the guy who started PodCamp in 2006.
You won't see the faces that I'm making, which is probably good. So,
yeah, you get an audio only kind of a version of it. So, I think
Chris,
we're going to grab
something questionable. I make a face.
Yeah, I get a different kind of yellow card if you can't see my face. So we're grabbing Elizabeth Dawes-Gay. We're going to talk about EPOD Day. I think it's a great chance to connect up. Perfect. That means Lacey, you're next after that. But, you know, you get a chance to run pee if you got to. All right. Elizabeth, how the heck are you?
Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for being part of the storyline today. We're talking about EPOD Day, which is your invention, your creation. Talk a little bit about this community space and also what it means to have a community space in the world of virtual community spaces.
Yeah. Thank you. So EPOD Day is actually a Yoruba word that means meeting or gathering. It conveys a sense of coming together. And EPOD Day is a co-working and community space designed for Black, Indigenous, and women of color change makers. So we bring those change makers together to build skills, resilience, and power in order to transform society for the good of our community. And so, you know, the initial idea for EPOD Day was to have a in real life, in person, physical co-working space. I was actually in DC, where I'm based, looking at properties at venues to host that space. And then COVID happened, right? Mm-hmm. The world changed, things changed. And so I had to make a decision of whether I was going to pursue that, continue to pursue it, or just kind of put it on hold. But, you know, there came a moment where I was thinking, I was like, you know, people still need this space. They still need safe places to gather, to grow, to network, to be seen, to be heard. And so decided to just do it virtually. I was like, there are things that I can do online that people will appreciate. And they did. And so in April 2020, we launched with our first programming that really was responsive to COVID-19 and what folks were dealing with adjusting to this new work from home life, as well as, you know, dealing with some of the consequences of like the racial justice uprisings and the police brutality that was becoming, you know, more and more visible. It's always been there, but, you know, we had a sort of reckoning in 2020. And so the community is really a place where folks can find that support, solidarity, and, you know, long-term, we're definitely looking to have programming and curriculum that helps build skills to help people make social impact.
So why? What made you come up with the idea? Like, what was it that convinced you needed a different space?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So actually in 2013, I founded something called Black Women 4, which was a leadership development initiative and networking initiative for progressive Black women in the DC area. I did workshops, we did networking events, conversations with folks who were like mentors, so group mentoring. And I've always just had this drive to support Black women, women of color in living their best lives, whatever that looks like. And so professional development is a part of that. Health and well-being is a part of that. Some of my other work, like my other life, is as a reproductive justice advocate and a maternal health advocate. And so, you know, I've seen these spaces, you know, being an advocate and being someone that's, I don't know, I consider myself a champion for Black women and women of color. I've seen that what happens when we have that space of our own to gather that is safe for us, right? The way that race and racism is set up in the United States, you know, it's sometimes difficult for a lot of people to be their true selves, to fully participate in integrated environments because of the racism that happens, because of the oppression, microaggression, you know, things that you may not notice, right? Or you might be like, am I crazy? Like, am I imagining this? You know, that person being rude to me, is that because of my race or my appearance or something else, right?
Or people saying unintentionally offensive things, like differently abled, like they just don't know what they don't know.
Yeah,
right, I'm just an example. Don't be
it's
mad.
It's a good example.
A lot, you know, careless things, you know, the privilege that, you know, white people and majority people get to walk around with, you know, it matters to the rest of us. And so having a safe space where, you know, we can just do what we do, connect with each other, learn from each other, that's super important.
You go a little further, even on just explaining out the community, because when you explain women, we get the new women with an X instead of the E to say, you know, we're even extra inclusive. That's obviously important to you. How do you signal beyond that? Like beyond the secret X-Men letter that some people know what that means, what do you do to make sure that people know that they're also welcome at your table?
Yeah, so in certain places it is an X, you know, where it's easier just to have the X and just say women of color, and then sometimes it's women and femmes of color, and then, like, for example, on our website, it's explicitly written out, again, where there's space and, you know, opportunity, you know, the real estate to go in depth. You know, we talk about women of color being, you know, cis, trans, as well as non-binary. So, you know, everyone who identifies with that, you know, is welcome. And we also, like, for example, when we're hosting events and we post them on Eventbrite, you know, there will be a note about this being an inclusive space, but also a note about it being a safe space. Sure. And, you know, this is designed for, and it centers, you know, women and femmes of color. And so allies and accomplices are, you know, certainly welcome to partner with us in different ways.
Very cool. Very cool. I just made myself laugh. I didn't mean to. Very cool, Kanye. glad that man is out of office. The world sure was interesting last year, in the last handful of years, in the last 400 years. You know, the biggest thing I heard from all my friends and the people that I try to be an ally for are, boy, we sure hope it's not over now that we think it's over. You know, ding dong, the president's gone. That doesn't mean it changed. That doesn't mean everything's good. How are you going to work to keep momentum going, you know, as we start to hide this stuff again, as we could close things like Parler and make people go back under their rugs? How do we keep it lit up?
That's a good question. Yeah, no, we absolutely do. It has to stay at the forefront. There is no sweeping. I don't think there is any sweeping this back under the rug. Like, too much has been revealed. Too much awakening has happened. Too much awareness. And, you know, that's a wonderful thing. And so it's up to individuals to step into their activism and their advocacy, and to hold policymakers accountable, to hold people in leadership accountable. So yes, we have a new administration that is a friendlier administration. We have the first, you know, Black woman, South Asian woman in the White House, something that I was really excited about. Those are big steps. You know, we also had the first Black president, and then this happened. So that just, history has shown us that we have to continue that momentum. And one of the ways we do that, you know, is by efforts like EPOD A that are building skills, empowering and supporting women of color to stay at the forefront, right? This is a safe place for them to come and regenerate, to refuel, to know that they have people who are walking with them as they are doing their advocacy, as they are calling out injustice, you know, as they are making sure that there's policy and programs and systems that actually work for Black and Brown communities. So, you know, one of the things that we do is amplify the voices of those women of color, women and femmes of color that are at the forefront, or maybe not even, you know, maybe they're not at the forefront, but they are doing things quietly in their communities on the ground. Just last night, we had, every Thursday this month, we're doing our Movement Makers series, which is a series on Instagram Live where folks get to hear the stories and the journeys of Black, Indigenous, and women of color who are making bold moves and creating change. And so we had Quandisha German Ellis on last night, who's an advocate, who told a story about how she had her own safe space in a house in New York, in Harlem, you know, helping, creating space for Black and Brown girls and women, and, you know, centered that around food and, you know, safety circles, sister circles, and that kind of thing. But she was prompted to move because of the police brutality that was happening in Harlem, because of incidents that happened during, you know, the summer of 2020, that affected her and her partner. And so we, you know, we talked about her story and how she's now moved to another state and is planting roots there and is, you know, seeing amazing things come out of that move. So we feature, you know, women like that who you wouldn't know about, right? They're not Twitter popular. They're not Instagram famous, but they're creating safe spaces. They're doing the work. They're feeding their community. And so we just try to show people those models, and then hopefully someone else will be inspired to do the same.
What now? So now when you can't physically come together, I mean, we're hoping obviously we'll be able to do that in the next year as people get vaccinated and all that sort of thing. How do you continue to support your community during times like this? Like, does training go online? What kinds of things are you doing?
Yeah, so we have an online space. So this, like I said, mentioned this past year, we've done a lot of online events and workshops and gatherings. And it'll be the same for a little while. So we have a Mighty Network that's at community.epade.online. But if you go to epade.online, you can see that. So we're all virtual right now. Again, just bringing in folks to lead skills building activities, to lead conversations. We have a biweekly, what we call Kiki and Co-Work, which is an opportunity for folks to just, while you're doing, you know, your regular work for your day job or things that you might just need to take care of, you can connect with other folks. You know, people are seeking that connection, that generative connection, that ability to meet people that are going to be helpful to their work or helpful to them personally. And so we're continuing to curate those safe spaces online. And then hopefully in the near future, we can do some in-person events because I know folks are excited to meet each other.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think like as soon as everybody like it's safe again, everyone's just going to come out and like hug random strangers for a month?
You know I want to. I was like, I told my friends, I was like, I'm never missing another brunch. I'm never missing another party. I'm going to be everywhere, you know, that Visa is like pretty much when this is over. So
I will never miss the gym. That's what I said. Like probably about a month into being stuck in my house, not being able to go to the gym 2 miles away because nobody here masks and stuff. I was like, I will never miss another damn day at the gym.
Right.
Elizabeth, I have just such a stupid, nerdy mechanical question. Do you do your art? Is this your work to make these beautiful signages?
I'm so glad you asked because I get to celebrate and lift up the amazing designers that work with me. So this is like a hodgepodge of templates that I had created by these fantastic designers called the Homegirl Box. They're based in New York, two women of color. So they put together templates. I also have another Black woman designer who created my logo and branding. That's fantastic. And then I do some of it and my intern does some of it. So it's a mix of a lot of people working on design. But one of the things, I'm glad you asked that because one of the things that is really important to EPADE is paying Black, Indigenous, and women of color for their work. So we pay folks to contribute, we pay for workshops, you know, as much as possible. We're using Black, Indigenous, and women of color vendors and service providers to create content and to do things for us as we grow.
I love that so much. There was a great Netflix series with Killer Mike called Trigger Warning, where in one of the episodes he tries to buy from start to finish of at least one whole day only from Black people and Black culture. He goes, you know how hard that is once you get to the easiest thing that you always have on your body, your cell phone? And so he had to go and find a company that kind of fit that work. And then his other problem was he couldn't find weed because it's almost all from the people in the Pacific Northwest, which is a whole bunch of white hippies. And he goes, if I had a Jamaican connection, I'd be all set. He goes, but this is important to my life.
Nobody said equality was easy.
But what he said was, he said that, you know, it should be a goal of all people kind of trying to work in this culture right now is to keep as many dollars as possible in the community that they're trying to grow. And so that's what you're highlighting. That's why I brought that in, because I think that people don't understand that that's a simple way to make this work a little better, is to make sure that the money goes into the hands of the people you hope to rise up.
Basics, yeah.
Right. Elizabeth Dosgay, we have so many questions and not enough time. We have to poop you out into
but
the background.
But don't go away.
Stick around. We got one little panel at the very end, but thanks for bringing Ipade to us.
Thank you.
Yoruba means that you could have been from Nigeria or two other areas. Are you Nigerian by background or?
So my background, so my dad is Jamaican. My mom's from Alabama, you know, a Southern Black person. And, you know, we've done ancestry DNA to find the results. And so I am actually a lot, you know, mostly Nigerian.
Wow.
And other West African and European mixed in.
Nice. It's a beautiful word. So thank you so much for bringing it to us and giving us some good education.
Please stand by. Please, Bob doesn't want you to go away.
I have one more really super fast ad read, and then we're bringing Lacey Chisholm, and oh, I can't wait for the energy. can't wait for the energy. If you're an author, and I feel like Elizabeth and Lacey have a book in them. I think Steve should be writing a book, but he's too busy gaming. Pubsite, pub-site.com is the site that lets you build a site for authors. It's lickety-split easy, super fast. You just go in there, make your site. It takes you a couple hours, and you have a site up and running. Super easy tools, very clickable stuff. 2 hours, you'll be done.
14-day free trial.
14-day free trial. You want to make a show just like this one? Seebrogan.me/StreamYard. StreamYard's the app we're using to make this work. Seebrogan.me/StreamYard lets Elizabeth add a whole new thing because she can run a show around EPUB A, and then who would know? StreamYard's a deal. Cheap as heck. It's very affordable, and you can see it looks like a real show. Hey, Johnsonville is one of our sponsors. You like sausage? We love sausage. Look at me. I'm made of sausage. You can get Johnsonville sausage.
I feel like
sent
a sausage fitting into my jeans after a year without going to the gym.
Gosh, I tried to put on real normal pants the other day, and the world said, nope, you're still in quarantine. Carrie at chrisbrogan.com. She'll send you sausages. We got those people to sponsor us. Can you believe it? You want free sausage? The only thing better. Oh, 2 times published author? Spawn. Look at the things they don't know about you.
Stop talking about sausage if you're going to talk about Steven's books.
Well, I was back at publishing. You know, we're doing some stuff here. Johnsonville, go get some.
His emoticon would imply that you should have known that.
Yeah, he's like, your shitty host is what he just said. I get it. Lacey Chisholm, save me. Talk to us. Make us smarter.
Good morning. Good morning, Tristan Carey. So good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Glad to have you.
I'm so excited to have you. So tell me everything. How did you get interested in dance and health and the connection between the two, and how'd that bring you to opening your own business?
So my mom says I've been dancing since I was in her belly. So it's always been something that I've done and loved. Took dance classes all my life, danced in college. And then after graduating, I got a degree in journalism and advertising, but I would always rush home from work to teach kids dance. And I decided that I really wanted to start changing my life and change my job, change my career, and go into teaching. So I started teaching in North Carolina, teaching second grade, and then also teaching dance. I visited New York and fell in love, and everybody thought I was crazy because I'm originally from South Carolina, and I was living in North Carolina, but I had this strong affinity to New York and knew I needed to be here, and got an interview at a school in East New York, Brooklyn, and I just decided to move. I was like, I'm going to get the job, and I'm going to move there. I taught in East New York for 5 years, taught reading and dance, then taught fourth grade, and then was asked to help open a middle school in East New York. Did a wonderful job there working with the kids and the community and the parents, but definitely got overwhelmed, worked a lot, gained 65 pounds. I was overweight. I had high cholesterol, high blood pressure, pre-diabetes. And I was in my mid-20s, and I knew I was too young to take medicine. So I decided to take back my health through what I loved, which was dance, because I realized in that job, that was the only time in my life that I was not dancing. So I took a job working for an education nonprofit, and I was had the ability to work from home, which was amazing. And so I took a lot of classes in Manhattan. I would travel to Manhattan to take the best classes. I would look for classes that I couldn't really afford. So I would, you know, be on Groupon and Living Social and any type of discount I could get to see what was going on in these $40 and $50 classes that weren't in my community and weren't accessible to me. I figured out what classes I could take that I loved, that inspired me and would help me lose the weight. And they were also really fun. And I decided that I wanted to open my own dance studio and bring that to my community. And so I entered a business plan competition at the library, and I didn't win, but I need that type of structure and accountability. And after completing that plan and being connected with so many wonderful people at the Women's Business Outreach Center, I was really excited and felt more motivated to actually open a dance studio. And part of the plan was to look for a space, budget for the space. And so there was a space that was in my neighborhood within walking distance, and I'd reached out to the realtor just to get info for the plan. I was not ready to open. And when I met her there, she was like, this is your space. This is where you are going to have your first dance studio. And I was like, okay, lady, you know, I'm just getting information for my plan. And then she went outside and she started telling people on the street, hey, this is Lacey Chisholm. She's going to open a dance studio here. She went to Crown Fried Chicken. She went to the barber shop. She started telling everybody. And I'm like, she's ridiculous.
She was manifesting.
Right. She was. She definitely was. And I appreciate that. But after I submitted the business plan, she reached out to me and said, you know, you should really send that business plan to the landlord. I think he'd be interested in seeing it. And I said, okay. I did it, and he called me back, and he accepted the offer, and I had a lease, and I was in shock. But I was so grateful because I actually had a plan. So it wasn't as difficult to open. So after I got the lease signed, that was in November of 2015. I planned for the ribbon cutting and grand opening in 2016. Actually, yesterday was the anniversary of my first ribbon cutting in the first space we were in. And we outgrew that space and moved to a larger space, which was wonderful. And it had only been in that space for a year and a half before COVID took its toll. But an amazing space, amazing community of people. I started it to, you know, encourage African-American women to take charge of their health through dance and fitness, because it's something that's so important. And we're dying at higher numbers than anybody else. And, you know, by being active 30 minutes a day, we can chop that number down. And then I also wanted to bring people together because the neighborhood is changing. It's diversifying. I wanted to bring all types of people together to dance together, to make friendships, to make connections, to increase their health, and to love each other in the same space because we live in the same world. And then to also provide a safe space for children and families to work out together.
It was important for you to keep the pricing something that you felt the communities around you could afford. I want to hear a little bit about that. Talk to me about pricing.
Yeah. So when I was teaching, as you know, teachers don't make that much money. I wanted to take classes that were elite. I wanted to go to the best gyms and the best studios. And it really wasn't feasible for me to do that 3 and 4 times a week like I wanted to. I couldn't afford it. But I loved it. I loved the atmosphere. I loved the quality of the classes I was getting. I didn't enjoy the commute. It would take, and you know, almost an hour to get there, an hour for the class, an hour to get back. I couldn't pay $40 and $50 a class. That's like, you know, almost $200 a week just for class, not the memberships. It, you know, I felt like I deserved to be in a quality class, an affordable class, a clean space with quality teachers, and I wanted to feel comfortable, and I wanted that in my community. I wanted to be able to take, you know, a train ride, maybe 2 local stops, or even walk there, because I could walk to the studio now, and I knew that my community needed quality classes. I remember one time some children came to this space on a field trip, and they were supposed to be going to visit Black-owned businesses. And when they came in, they were like, this isn't a Black-owned business. And I was like, I'm the owner. Why would you say that? And they were like, because it's too nice. And that really stuck with me. So I made the space to it's a reflection of me. It's a reflection of what I would want, the type of dance studios that I've grown up in, the type of community spaces that I've been in, the quality of dance programs that I've had. And I want that for my community, too. And I want, you know, my children, all children, to know that, you know, a Black-owned business can be great. It doesn't have to be in Manhattan, and it doesn't have to be, you know, a business owned by by a person of another culture, but it could be great just because the person is great, just because their spirit is great, just because their love for their community is great.
You know, the thing I was thinking about is I felt the same way we all just felt when you said that, but at the same time, kids speak truths that other people won't. So, I mean, that's an interesting thought too, is just to think that that's their perception of the world, is that Black-owned business is less than, or, you know, that it can't possibly be, you know, this. That's why we need an Elizabeth. That's why we need you. That's why we need advocacy, because, you know, everybody has to get out there and make that kind of experience happen. I want to grab everybody back, Lacey. We have, you know, all these people. There's so much alchemy between all the stuff you're talking about. See, we get all five of us in here. We can fit. Look at that. That's amazing. I'm curious to know, Elizabeth, when you heard all that, what'd your belly say?
Yeah, I loved hearing your story, Lacey. They probably saw me backstage like nodding and like going along with it, because from the manifestation of your first space happening to the difference that you're making in showing this example of what a Black-owned business is and can be to servicing your community, I was feeling all of it. So it's just a really inspiring story.
Thank you, Elizabeth.
Nice double judge on Twitch. I was also corrected backstage that Steve Spahn is also an author. So I said, when you write a book, but I'm terribly wrong. Steve's an author already.
You're fine. Can I also just say, fuck the person who said that to you, Lacey?
Oh, yeah. Fuck that little kid.
It was a
little
child. Kid. It was a child.
Listen, I don't even care, kid.
He doesn't discriminate.
No, that's right. No. How dare you.
Love it. One question I have is, you know, this is a show where obviously there's a lot of ally intention. You know, there's a lot of people here who want to do good things. What do you want us to leave here doing? Steve, you first. What do you want us to leave here doing differently, better?
You know, almost stole my own backpack answer, but since I'll save that one. My thing I think that we all need is more understanding of each other's causes and viewpoints in life, so that we don't necessarily all live the same life, and we won't be able to understand everyone else's viewpoints. But if we listen to each other, we can garner a lot of information, and that is power. And that's how you learn where your privileges are. That's how you learn how you need to check yourself, and that's how you learn how to help your fellow person.
Except don't listen to that kid, because screw them.
That kid. Jerk kid.
Parents are probably jerks too then.
I'm here for that.
Oh, man.
I'm here for that. All right, Lacey, one last thing to you, and then we're going to ask the backpack question, that sort of a thing, which is in this process, you kind of, you talked about, you know, hey, I like dance, blah, blah, blah. Then I got big and fat. Then I did dance. It's got to be accessible, right? Like you have different, you know, levels of skill that you make this for. When I even went and did yoga, they were like, it's okay, we can get you through this. Like, does that work? How do you do adaptations and whatnot for dance, or is it just come as you are? How's that work?
Yes, definitely. And that is one of the things that people love most about the studio, because it's for everyone. It's a really warm and welcoming environment, and people feel comfortable being there. They don't feel judged. They don't feel like they can't be themselves. They can't they don't feel like because they're a certain weight, they can't stand in the front row, that they can be seen, that, you know, maybe they are rhythmically challenged and they're working on it, they still feel comfortable going into the middle of a freestyle circle. So it's really about the tone that we've set and the community that we've built. We have people in classes that range in ages from, you know, 21 to my oldest student is 91, and they all feel comfortable in the same space. So that's just really, really important to me, that everybody feels comfortable, because I've definitely been in a situation and had traumatic dance experiences. And a lot of people do. A lot of people suffer from experiences related to dance, and they're like, I will never dance again. I hate dance. They just don't feel comfortable, and they're really, you know, protective of being vulnerable and putting themselves out there. But our space is not like that at all. Everyone is welcome. People are free to dance and feel comfortable and learn and explore about other cultures while also taking charge of their health.
I love hearing it. You know, as you were talking about this, it just made me think of this video, because I am absolutely this white kid. These kids are all on the line showing off their dabs. This is years ago. It was still okay to dab. And here's me.
Oh, poor little pickle.
So that's me dancing.
Hey, you did a great job, Chris.
Well, thank you. I got a lot of participation trophies for my abilities to dance.
I actually just talked earlier this week about dropping out of ballet class. I was in the class with a bunch of it was all little white stick insects. And I was a trophy little girl. And the teacher said, listen, ballet is hard. If you lay down on the floor, you should get up and see your outline and sweat. And I'm like, well, screw that. So I quit ballet.
And that's a lot of people's stories.
Right.
It's not going to be for me.
There's a lot to it. All right. Well, listen, it's this time.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom! Kaboom!
Wow. I just heard that through someone's speakers, and it was so epic. That was so good. I'm thinking I gotta make people have, their speakers out more often. I got to chill. Tim Kitzrow still doing it from the front row. Person of the day. I think he left, but I was going to go with Naz, but he left. So F it. I'm giving it to Bob Collins. Mr. Robert Collins for you. Also sometimes known as Mr. Dabalina. Mr. Bob Dabalina.
He knows more about pop culture than just about anybody.
He is the most pop culture man in the universe. All right. He was the first one to notice the Eevee, by the way, Steve. He boop right away. That was the first thought. Even when you were a little tiny square. So here's the question we ask every single guest.
I'm still a little tiny square, honestly.
I'm wicked square.
I'm a little tiny square.
Naz is here, but he's willing to yield the floor.
Naz is still here. Sorry, too bad you lose. No apple for you, Italian.
What's wrong with you? Be nice.
All right, I'll hit the button. Next time, Naz, probably not. This is the question we ask every single guest. What goes in your backpack? This could be something physical. It could be something metaphorical. Five-time world champion beatboxer Butterscotch said a banana because it helps with that. You need to do good beatboxing. We've had some really crazy answers over the years. Nobody's put in a harmonica or anything simple like that. Carrie, what's a good physical one?
Oh, so a notebook. Somebody recently said a notebook, and we allowed them two objects because you can't use a notebook without a pen or pencil, like a writing implement of some kind. Oh, and sticky note was yesterday. Elaine Fluker, I think, had post-it notes.
She was a big fan of the stickies. Mm-hmm. And then we've had all kinds of metaphorical answers over the years. I never seem to remember any. Although Nikki Porche from Buy From a Black Woman once said, can I put black women in my bag? And we thought it sounded like trafficking. And that was the end of the episode because Carrie laughed so hard and Nikki laughed so hard that we couldn't say any other words.
Well, she went first. And so our other guest was a burlesque performer who was white. And I said, you're not allowed to say white women. You're not allowed. And that was it. We were just like, me and Nikki were a mess. And Chris
show
was
did
disgusted
not end,
with
and
us.
I was like the grumpy dad. Like,
and he ended the show.
Kids know what time it is.
And then we tried to bring her back for a holiday thing. And she and I, just as soon as we saw each other, were laughing all over again. It was a mess. So that's it. I don't know what will ever happen if we ever try to bring her back again. Oh, the oral nut said to take something out of the backpack. They were actually
the first YouTube creators, the oral nuts, from the backpack.
Take ego out of the backpack or else it'll ruin your creative projects. So they said.
So let's see. Elizabeth Dawes Gay, what goes into the backpack or out?
Yeah, I would say to put a lot of audacity into the backpack. You know, as I was thinking about this question, I was like, that's a word that was just resonating with me. And it came up last night on our IG live. So, you know, being audacious, being bold, having the guts to just go for it, to know that you can, that you have the resources or that the resources will come to you. So audacity.
There's no I in team, but there's ass in audacity. I'm totally in for it.
Oh, brother.
Oh, Lacey Chisholm, you dancing queen. What goes into the backpack from you?
My authentic self. So I think everybody should bring their authentic self in their backpack. Because a lot of times we have this face that we show to the world, but that's not truly who we are. And in order to really impact our world and to be most effective, we have to be our authentic self and know that that is really all we need.
I love it so much. And I also love the idea that, it's the most important thing you need to bring for dance, right? If you're not connected with you, then you're not going to connect with the world. Stephen Spahn, what a journey it's been. I cried. It was better than your cat. What goes in that backpack?
You know, I was thinking about this a lot, and I'm going to have to go with empathy. I did an entire 7-minute video on just the lack of empathy that is currently plaguing our society, where we just don't connect with one another and feel for each other in a way that we should. You know, one of my favorite authors, Pierce Brown, said that trust takes minutes to make, a moment to break, and a lifetime to rebuild. And I feel like if we were to have a little bit more empathy for one another, then that backpack wouldn't need much, because then we'd have everyone else helping them and ourselves with whatever's in our other backpacks.
That's such a great point. No one's ever brought it up before that every person has a backpack and we could work together.
You know, I just wanted to put one last little tiny thing on the screen, which kind of wrecks the whole flow of the show, but whatever. I just saw this here.
Hello there. My friend Steve Spahn asked me to jump in and help spread the word about this incredible initiative that he's involved with. But full disclosure, he did offer to pay me the $278 million speaking fee that I've grown accustomed to.
I did what?
But I told Steve that he can take that money and shove it where the sun don't shine. You just pay me in witty banter and side eyes. AbleGamers.org has been helping.
So I think I'm not going to go the whole thing, but come on, Ryan Reynolds. How fun are you?
I don't know. Maybe that's John Bailey.
Our friend John Bailey does voiceover work, and sometimes he does everybody, including Ryan Reynolds, when that's Ryan doesn't want to fly back to do the retakes.
Epic voice guy on Instagram. Check out his deep fakes. They're amazing.
My grandmother was a bit of a gamer, but not a very good one. And so this is in the early days of gaming, and you know, what she didn't realize that it was actually just Simon. And that was, we had a little problem explaining to her what the difference was between that and video games.